Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to another extra episode this week. It is a Friday, and normally on a Friday on Patreon, we do the spotlight, or in preseason, we've been doing the notebook. But this time round, we are going to be doing a flat preview of La Liga, which also starts this weekend. We're going to be covering, you know, all the bits and bobs that you need to know about. We'll start at the top, we'll work our way through down to the bottom, where we're going to bring in a special guest, David Cartledge, who's going to come in and chat to us about some of the storylines that you might not have heard, a bit like what Jasmine and Alex did with the Bundesliga and Liga last week. And then we're going to look a little bit more, a couple of storylines that take our fancy down the line. But my name is Jack Collins, and I will be your host today. And joining me is the rank god, Mr. Sam Tai.
Hello, my friend.
Hello, mate. And of course, our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Hello, Jack.
Hello.
Hello.
It's all good. It's nice. Back in the studio. We're on our own.
We're in a studio. No one's watching us right now. We can just do whatever
relaxed
we want. For
the last few post boxes, we've had eagle-eyed spectators, haven't we? Two, three, four people.
They've been trying to do work at Live Score. And they're just trying to get on with it. They can't even talk to each other. They're having to like WhatsApp each other when they're sat next to each other because we're just chatting.
I feel bad.
On the last show, should we tell everyone what happened?
I think we should, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's important. We started recording. We got to about 40 minutes through the post box and realised that the camera had shut off.
8 minutes into the recording.
That's a re-record. The whole thing.
So they had to listen to it twice.
Yeah.
Not only was it bad enough to listen
to it. It was hard enough for us to say it again. For them to listen to that again was like a gibberish ranking.
Yeah, tough, tough. I mean, they could go to the canteen or the cafe. I mean, obviously,
it's their office.
We their office that we don't work in.
No, but like they let us use the mics. So I'm like, well, if you don't like it, then obviously you can go. But it does. I'm not going to tell them like just leave, man, because to be fair, it is theirs.
Well, okay, all right. Let's get on with La Liga, shall we?
By the way, we love you, LiveScore. Thank you for letting us use your studio.
Yeah, exactly. Right, let's move on and let's start at the top of La Liga, Sam. It feels only right to talk about the title race as the first thing, and I think maybe for the first time ever, you look at this and go, Atletico Madrid, favourites right now in this title race.
I'd say so. I'd be interested to get your take on that and then Dean's again. But I would put Atletico Madrid as the current favourites to win the title, definitely. I mean, what's happened at Barcelona, not just Lionel Messi leaving, but the crisis that they've endured over the course of the summer, inability to register certain players. We don't know if they're going to get Memphis onto the registration sheet or not. Like, it's a bit touch and go, not only for the first game against Real Sociedad, but like genuinely that is a threat that's hanging over them for the first half of the season. And is there any point in trying to register Sergio Aguero if he's going to miss the first 2 months of the season anyway?
Not yet.
Does he just train in December and then register in January if you can? And a club in this position who have been through all of this, who are constantly in the news, the president has to go out every day and fight another fire. The players don't know who's registered, who's not. They're reeling from the loss of Messi. Look, they've had some really nice players come through in pre-season. Some good young players. Alex Collado is coming for some good cameos and he's going to stick around. You've got Gavi stepping up from the youth ranks. Is that enough of a tonic to really settle this team down? And if Memphis can't be registered, does that just completely destroy their forward line? Do they go from a position of having so many forwards and us not really knowing how they're going to line up, which we can get to, well, who's left? Who is left? And then you go to Real Madrid, who, I mean, it feels like kind of like a stock down on Real Madrid, doesn't it? I don't know why exactly, because, I mean, you've lost Sergio Ramos, club captain, but you've replaced him with David Alaba. It shouldn't feel as gloomy as it does.
We lost Varane as well.
Lost Varane as well.
His defensive partner.
Forgot that one.
There's a big hole there.
Apart from that, are they okay?
No, because Eden Hazard, we're not sure what we're getting out of him. We're not sure where goals are coming from because they just relied on Benzema last season and the year before, and they're still doing that because they haven't brought in anyone else. They're hoping, I think, that Gareth Bale comes through, and actually, like, I think that relationship with Ancelotti, which is a good one, might mean that we get a last good year out of Gareth Bale. But no, I know what you mean. There does seem to be a little bit of a difference with Madrid, but they always prove us wrong. So this is why you have to say, well, actually, the bookies have them as favourites.
I was going to say, this was going to be the point that the bookies have Real Madrid as favourites to win this title, which I think is maybe a wee bit disingenuous given that Atleti are champions and have strengthened and both the other big guns appear to have lost ground. Mm. Now, whether that is enough or not is a different question, and we'll come on to Atleti and what they've done. But there is a point to be made here about Real Madrid that, and there's a brilliant article from friend of the pod, Zach Lowy, about how their finances have shaped out. He wrote one about Barcelona that I linked back in our Torcida newsletter on Patreon the other week about how Barcelona had ended up in the crisis that they have. He's written another one now about Real Madrid, and they've posted profits in the last couple of years over and over again. You know, we've seen obviously the big transfer of Eden Hazard, but aside from that, it has tended to be, you know, smaller deals that have, you know, ticked along, brought in some young players. Not all of them have worked, sure.
And not all of them are cheap, because
they're not all cheap. Rodrigo, but what I'm saying is that they're not outspending 400 million in a single window in the way that Barcelona have been. And they've shrunk their debt massively. So you look at where Barcelona are in terms of, oh God, they're in financial crisis. And you look at now where Real Madrid are, and bear in mind, they're still renovating the Santiago Bernabeu, and when that is done, they will reap financial reward from that as well, because it will be a bigger stadium, which will give more people in. And in the way that Barcelona have been really hit by the Camp Nou not being filled over the last couple of years, Real Madrid have kind of sidelined that by not playing there and having it renovated in a time that's got kind of lucky for them in some ways. But what you can say from that is that Real Madrid are in a far healthier financial position than perhaps they were a couple of years ago, because a couple of years ago, we were looking at both Barcelona and Real Madrid and being like, whoa, they look like they're in a wee bit of trouble there in terms of finances. Obviously, Barcelona have got worse. Real Madrid have dealt with it, and it puts them in a really strong position, I think, going forward in terms of the next 5 years or so compared to the crisis that we see Barcelona in. So that's probably worth pointing out, that whilst Real Madrid aren't as exciting this year, and I think that that's a fair point to make. They are in a much healthier state in terms of long-term planning.
I mean, they would have signed Mbappe if they could. So they would have spent £150 million if they could. It's just that Mbappe is not going to leave PSG at the moment. So next year they'll go and spend... they won't have to spend that money because they'll get him on a free, but the wages that will come in with him and the agent fees will mean that will go, and then they'll go and sign, I don't know, Haaland or Pogba or whatever else. So next summer, they will be back in a mess probably.
But they could, this is what I mean. At the moment, they can afford to spend 200 million on next summer.
Do you know what I think is interesting? I think the timing of Ancelotti coming in is probably partly to do with the squad that he's got to manage right now. And I think that he's had a good record in the past of managing older players and squads that look like they're getting towards the end of their lifeline. Did it at Milan, been at various other places. Like, I kind of trust him to get the best out of this group of players right now. I've talked about Bale already. But
half
then,
of them know him from last time.
Well, that's it. And I think it's just, that's probably why he's come in right now. They probably told him the situation and he's content with it. And however much you say, well, they haven't strengthened, blah, 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 they're still going to be in there, of course they are.
Yeah. No doubt about that whatsoever. That's a given.
Yeah,
that's a given. That is. But to come back and loop it round to Atletico Madrid, who are the defending champions and haven't had to go through the ultimate. Basically, it's like a crisis, like an emotional crisis that Barcelona have suffered over their both their finances and Lionel Messi and Real Madrid to an extent as well, losing their long-serving club captain Sergio Ramos and his defensive partner for the first time in a decade. They're just going to have two new dudes there. Now, those dudes are really good. Alaba and Eder Militao are very good players. But it's different. And it's weird. And then you can compare and contrast that to Atletico Madrid, the defending champs, who have all they've done is add Rodrigo de Paul to this setup. A setup that was better than everybody else's last season. So how much ground have these other two actually really genuinely got to make up? It feels like quite a lot.
Well, I suppose there probably wasn't that much between them last season, but there is a drop-off, especially in Barcelona's case, in losing Lionel Messi. Now, Rodrigo de Paul is a wonderful player, but I think he'll be excellent in this Atleti side, but I do think this is probably the fairest it's been in ages, and that's saying something. I think Atleti winning it last year, and when they won it a couple of years back, felt like underdogs triumphing, right?
Yes.
If Atleti were to win it this year, you'd be like, yeah, fair enough. Pretty reasonable. They've also brought in Marcus Paolo from Fluminense on a free transfer. He's a young 20-year-old winger who seems to have a fair amount of talent in the locker. 7 goals, 7 assists for Fluminense over the last couple of years. And yeah, it's just something to keep an eye on, because I was going to say, and maybe the big point is that Atleti felt like they lacked firepower at points last year, especially when Luis Suarez was out. And actually, you would imagine that Luis Suarez is getting no younger and is therefore...
Is he aging quickly?
He's not aging quickly or slowly, he's just aging. He'll probably miss more of the season this year than than he did last year, because that's what happens as you get older. They don't have many backup options. You look at, like, Vitolo's gone out on loan to Getafe. The loan transfer of Moussa Dembele wasn't a success. He didn't really play any games. He hasn't been made permanent. Atleti are apparently trying to sign Rafa Mir from Wolverhampton Wanderers. He had a really good season last year at Huesca.
Yeah. I like some really good goals. This feels right as well. Rafa Mir and Simeone feels like a good mix.
Yeah, I like it.
I feel Rafa Mir is a bit of a bull in a china shop, and Simeone likes those kind of players. Yeah, yeah, big time. Yeah.
But I do think they're lacking at the moment a wee bit of firepower.
Of course they are. Yeah, and look, they tried to get Griezmann like that. They did go for that, and so if they're trying to get Griezmann back, it shows you that they are slightly concerned about their attacking options and whether they'll have enough to get through the season. Because obviously Suarez had the bit between his teeth last season, like looking to prove Barcelona wrong for letting him go, and also try to prove to the general world that like he could still win a title himself, and he basically did it. What I want to see is João Felix here. This is his third season he's going into at Atleti. He's the club's record signing. And for all the promise, for all the talent, he hasn't done it yet. And this should be his season, right? He's had enough time to bed in.
He's injured at the moment, isn't he? I mean, he's already on the back foot. Like,
this seems to happen
every
year.
But this is what you need, right? Yeah, like, he's the guy that can really make that difference. Yeah.
But he needs the trust of his coach in order for that to happen. I'm not sure how much of it is genuinely his fault. Like, made 17 appearances in La Liga off the bench last season. And that's not because he was carrying niggles and knocks. It's because Simeone doesn't look to him
soon enough or early enough. He hasn't won his trust for one reason or another. I want to see it too, but part of it's not on him.
So did Simeone want him in the first? Because obviously there's this thing at Atleti where, like, Simeone, look, Rodrigo de Pau, that is a Simeone signing. Mm-hmm. Is João Félix a Simeone signing? No,
The fact that Griezmann left, obviously, and it put the onus on them to sign a creative name that was going to fill the gap. I think there would have been a push to sign him. He was at the time one of the most in-demand youngsters in Europe, and it was probably one to appease the fans as much as anything else. Mm. Whether that is what Simeone wanted or it's a different question. You'd have to raise it with someone who, you know, is more familiar with the inner workings of the club than we are. Mm. But there is an element that the fact that it hasn't worked out in the way that perhaps we expected suggests that something didn't quite go right with how they were supposed to gel.
Yeah, exactly. Look, a decade. This season marks a decade that Simeone's been in charge at this team, and that's another thing that's got to work in their favour, right?
So cool. Like, I love it.
That's unbelievable. And he signed a new contract. He's there till 2024. Like, he signed a new deal. So that consistency, because there was a bit of doubt, wasn't there? Do you remember about going back into last season? They were like, oh, is this it for Simeone? No. He's won the title and he's here. And that stability is what they need at a moment like this. Like, you want to take that momentum into next season, and you'd like to think that they'll have a good start, wouldn't you?
I think so. I think you'd expect it from them at the
very least.
I hope
they can continue. I really do.
I was going to say, Dina, gun to your head, who wins the league?
I honestly think that they are the favourites, and Simeone will probably, if he hasn't already, will come and play that down, because he always does. He likes them to be the underdogs. He likes to talk about how they don't have the financial backing of Barcelona and Real Madrid, or...
Well, he's grateful they'd have the financial backing of Barcelona.
Yeah, well, this is it. Or they haven't been able to become any stronger than those other two teams. And in this window, they are financially stronger. They have strengthened their squad probably better than the other two with Rodrigo de Pau. Like, yeah. Okay, Barca have made some good signings, but... If they can register them, we don't know. So and he can't use those excuses that he would usually use. And he just needs to evolve them again, I guess. Like, they just need to make sure that they do move on from last season. And any flaws that were there, maybe that stuttering that there was in the second half of the season when they just couldn't get that title in the bag.
was it the bag?
Maybe they needed to get it done earlier.
They knew.
Yeah.
But it's there for them, yeah.
So, Sam, you agree? Athletic favourites?
Yes. Did Dean actually tell us who is going to win the title? Were you very clear on that?
No, because they haven't started the games yet. Okay. So it's just a prediction. Yeah.
Okay. Your prediction is that Atleti win the league.
I think they should win the league.
No,
that's
what is
not
your
question.
Prediction?
That's the prediction.
Real Madrid.
I was waiting for it. So, because this is good, because you think Real Madrid are going to win the league. Sam?
I think Atletico Madrid are going to win the league.
And I think Barcelona are going to win
right,
the league.
Right, how are Barca setting up to make this happen?
Right, so there is obviously going to be the pressure to play the Barcelona way, and we've talked about it a little bit on various pods in the 4-3-3, all of the above. I don't think he's going to do it. I think he's going to revert to a 3-5-2. If I would say that my prediction is contingent on the fact that Memphis can be registered. Like, which, okay, I think is a fair contingent to make. Right. If they can't register Memphis and Memphis ends up in limbo for 6 months this season, Barcelona are in real trouble, like real trouble. But if they can register Memphis, I think that this Barcelona side will adapt. And look, we saw what happened with Leo Messi and what he said when he went to Paris, right? He said, I've been wanting to win the Champions League. It's the thing that's been on his mind. It's the thing that's been bugging him. There is this focus on European football. I think Barcelona, while they won't bin that off, will end up being knocked out of Europe relatively early. And I think it will benefit their league campaign. I also think that this squad, with Depay and Griezmann as a front two, is a really good squad in terms of how it meshes together. And now they're going to be weaker. Before I get told off for saying they're a better side, they're not a better side. They are a weaker side without Leo Messi. Any team in the world who lost Leo Messi would be a weaker side.
I love the idea that you think you're going to get told off.
I'm going to get told off. People are going to be in my mentions telling me off. But I do think that this side now, with a little bit less onus on how you fit everyone in together, has the ability to mesh slightly better in that the two up front will press, the two up front will be able to get around a little bit more. We will see, I think, Emerson like make that right wing back spot his own. I think he will bomb up and down that flank in the way that he has been doing for Betis and create havoc in the opposition third. The midfield three of Pedri, Busquets and Frankie de Jong is as good as any on earth.
Dreamy.
It's dreamy.
As long as
so
Pedri doesn't
ways.
Faint halfway through the season.
Yeah, but even then, and there are rotation options here, and we've seen Gavi Gavi come through in pre-season. Now, I don't think Gavi is going to be playing loads of minutes. We've seen Ricky Puig, you know, get a little bit more. I hope that those players are brought into that rotation in order that they can make things happen. And I think they will be. I really do. I think there's going to have to be this emphasis on trying new things without Messi. And I just have a feeling that the Barcelona are just good enough and going to be good enough domestically. I don't think they'll do brilliantly in Europe. I think domestically that Barcelona will take it.
I was saying to Sam earlier, like the other day when we were talking about this, and obviously I said, you know, would you go and who's bigger, Messi or Barcelona and all that kind of stuff. I didn't totally believe everything I was saying. I just wanted to get a discussion going. But last night I was doing a bit more on this and like looking at Barcelona a bit closer, and I was getting quite excited about what we're going to see from Barcelona now and the way that they've got to evolve and the way that it's going to make people change, particularly Griezmann. You know, like this is going to be a massive season for him now. I think that he's taken a lot of criticism from me and others. but his numbers weren't bad at all. Like I went and looked at what he got. Last season, 20 goals, 13 assists. His price tag obviously doesn't help when you're judging him. But I think Messi leaving probably means that he can play a role that he actually wants to play. I mean, I saw some predicted lineups from people in Spain of because they think that they'll line up in a 4-3-3, and it's expected that Griezmann will like play off the right, basically, which is what he wants. It could be exciting. And then you consider like Memphis is going to be the leader of the attack, and he's going to be the guy who has this extra weight
on his
shoulders.
He's the poster boy, isn't he, now?
I think so, yeah. And, you know, when he went to United as the number seven, that probably didn't come at a good time. Like, Man United were in transition and struggling. He felt a lot of the flack at that time when it probably wasn't what he needed.
I think he got screwed over by Louis van Gaal. He really did.
But then, luckily, he went to Lyon. Went to Lyon, and it just proved to be the perfect move for him, and he found himself again, and now he's got that back to that platform quickly, which was really important. He's got the move he wanted. Obviously, having Koeman as his boss is handy. Koeman's wanted him since he came into the job. He's worked with him before in a Dutch national team. And you look at it and you're like, okay, Griezmann and Memphis, probably start the season with Brathwaite, but then you're going to get Ansu Fati coming back. Suddenly it's starting to look really exciting. Barcelona were the highest scorers as well in La Liga last season. I know Messi got 30 of them, but they got 85 goals. You know, they're good. They're really good. I think there's a lot to be excited about.
I'm not going to sit here and doubt the offensive quality of Barca with or without Messi. I think my issues actually probably lay a little bit further back.
You know, they've got Ronald. You said Ronald was the answer. You said he was
back,
the truth.
It's going back to the back three when they've actually only got one centre-back that's good enough to play anyway, and then they're just going to add two more in. That's where I would basically say that Barcelona feel a little bit weak.
But they're kind of stacked in like options. None of them are like top tier.
Great. I mean, brilliant. I've got six sandwiches for lunch and I hate all of them, so I'm not going to eat them.
But they haven't. They've got six centre-backs, basically, that they can choose from.
There's also the element, Sam, that with the three in midfield that we've just discussed, with De Jong and Busquets playing, you know, slightly behind Pedro, you'd imagine, in the way that it shakes out, they've got cover for those defensive three in the way, not quite in the same way that Thomas Tuchel has set Chelsea up, for example, but a five across the middle does start to take a little bit of those deficiencies out of the picture. And then you put in the fact that there is one of the world's best goalkeepers behind them. It's not all doom and gloom in an offensive aspect.
No, I'm not trying to say it's they're absolutely doomed. I would just say, like, I don't think anybody's going to sit there and doubt Barca's firepower, but that's not really where this team is going to face its tests. It's going to face its tests at centre-back and who can play there and who can find form. And even Ter Stegen had a bit of a wobble last season. I know it all kind of went a bit awry at one point. But yeah, I'm just not quite as full of excitement. And like, I don't know, I guess you guys sound very sure that Barca are going to be...
I just think A-OK. Like I just got a new excitement about them. Just watching them play a bit like in the Juve game and just reading a bit more about like what the plan will be. And I'm just starting to think... Yeah, actually, this could be fun.
It will be fun to watch. I mean, look, we were talking about the Gamper, and you just mentioned it there. We were talking about Gamper on Monday, and we were saying they were very good. They were very exciting. They were good to watch. They knew what they were doing. The whole system seemed to work. And that's something that you kind of... You know, we talk about teams in transition who are in crisis, right? You don't expect them to come out and play the way that Barca did at the weekend. Now, I know it's a glorified friendly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
It's literally a friendly. It's not a glorified.
No, I guess there's a trophy at the end of it.
It's not an official match.
It's glorified.
It's not an official match.
Yeah, but it's still glorified.
No,
if you get a trophy, it's glorified.
The Super Cup is a glorified friendly because it's an official match.
No, I refuse to accept that. A friendly, you don't get trophy at the end of. You get a trophy at the end
of the
Gamper.
You do at this one.
because it's a cup. Yeah. So therefore, it's a glorified friendly. And on that note, I think we should probably bring in David before we murder each other. So, Sam, yesterday you spoke to David Cartledge, who is a Spanish football expert and editor at ESPN. And we talked to him about some of the storylines that we should be keeping an eye on in La Liga this season.
David, welcome to the Ranks SE podcast. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's nice to be on board. I've always been keen to get on, so here I am.
I know. We've been trying to make this work for, I'd say, probably well over a year, if we're being honest. And the thing is, we've never really been able to nail anything down. So I guess it's kind of ironic then that the week that we finally managed to find time to talk to each other is probably the busiest week of your life, mate, because Lionel Messi's left Barcelona.
I was going to say, I love how we finally nail it down when suddenly La Liga is just the league that everyone's going to forget about. They're like, oh, who's the superstar now?
Oh,
Benzema's the superstar.
Yeah,
but right. We're going to tell people why there's so much still to watch, basically.
We are, yeah. We're going to dig a little bit deeper than Messi. And when it comes to La Liga, I think you're the first port of call, particularly for these under the radar storylines. But look, since you're here and since it's this week, let's just get your 60 seconds on this Messi Barca shambles, shall mm-hmm. we?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I might be in a minority. I just think it's a nice point for Barcelona to step away into a new era and to start to clear those books and to start to focus on the young players, the Pedri, Ansu, Frenkie de Jong, and move on into a new era. And I just think the only sad thing about it is the way that everything has transpired, that Messi hasn't got the send-off that he deserves. He absolutely deserves. But I think it's a great time for Barcelona to part with Messi and just move on and start this new era.
The Barcelona fans will be delighted to hear that, because we've spent the last week or so on this podcast kind of painting a picture of true doom and gloom. So there's a little crack in the clouds, a little bit of positivity for you guys. Lovely to hear. But David, let's crack on with the ranking. So what's in at number three?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a look at the Chasen Park. Those who are, you know, Europa League, who have that, they have that in mind, and also that kind of that fourth best place, I think we should say, isn't
best
it?
Best of the rest, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so what's happened to this group then? It's quite a broad group based on last season's table. We've got Sevilla in fourth, who finished on 77 points. And Villarreal, I guess we could probably stretch this down to Villarreal, who were 19 points off Sevilla. Like, let's make no bones about it. They were miles off fourth.
That's Europa League winners, Villarreal.
Yeah. So what are these? And in between those two teams, you kind of got Real Betis and Real Sociedad. Yep. So what have these two teams, or these four teams, sorry, been up to over the summer? And how are they shaping up?
I think there's one thing in common, is that all these teams haven't really lost a key man. They're generally speaking going to have the same starting 11 and the same squad. I think we've seen every single year it's become synonymous with the Liga that teams get picked off. I think we could all make an argument for different players out of from the teams that we've mentioned could have gone. With Villarreal, they've still got Pau Torres. They've still got Gerard Moreno. They gave him a new contract.
Billion-year contract.
It was a
proper Sal Negueth move there, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. with Real Sociedad, you know, they could have lost Isaac. They've kept him. You know, there was so much talk about him. They managed to keep him as well. Sevilla, as we record this, have still got Koundé in their ranks. But we could see what happens in the next week or so. But they're still looking generally the same. They haven't lost a big, big superstar. These clubs are so used to having to lose someone and then going to the market and getting a cheap replacement. They haven't had to do that this time. So it's also meant that the knock-on effect from that is that they haven't really dip into the market as much as they usually would. Sevilla are usually scattergun in the market. They make a big sale and then they start pulling out signings, a couple of Ligue 1 signings. They get somebody from Bundesliga. They maybe go to Scandinavia as well. They do a few different things. And this time they haven't. They've just been steady away. They're potentially getting Gonzalo Montiel from River Plate, who I think will be a fabulous signing. And that gives them Argentina's first choice fullbacks as their own fullbacks as well in Acuña and Montiel. Now that is exciting. Yeah. And I love an Argentinian player in Sevilla. It just works.
It just does, doesn't it? It really works. Yeah. Eric Lamela going there. It kind of felt like he'd been there all along in a way.
Yeah, precisely. Ocampos is there as well. And we all know how exciting he can be as well. And, you know, Papu Gomez is still there as well. Yeah. So it just works. Maybe they should bring Banega back. That would make me really happy. But yeah, we'll see.
maybe. Well, what about Villarreal then? Let's skip to the bottom of that little pack. Obviously, as we record now, this is going to be out on Friday. So by the time anyone listens to this, the Super Cup result will have happened. We don't know what that is right now, but you know, beyond that, beyond Moreno, how are this team shaping up?
Again, very much the same, very steady away. And I think Unai Emery will absolutely love that. You look at throughout his career, he's had so much chaos at every club that he goes to, incomings, outgoings. This summer, he's still got his main stars. They've added a little bit as well. But generally, I think we'll be looking at the same team. And he'll be saying also to the younger players, you know, it's time for you to maybe step up and do a little bit more. I think I'm a big, big fan of him, but I think Samuel Chukwueze is somebody. He disappointed me a little bit last season. I expected a lot more. I thought it was going to be the breakout year. I thought it would be the summer that we talk about, oh, God, who's going to grab him for 30, 40 million in the Premier League? Hmm. Alas, it hasn't happened.
An injury didn't really help that at the end of the season.
Precisely.
I felt like he added a little bit to his game in the way of a sort of killer instincts last season. I think he definitely improved that. End product was the question mark over here.
Yeah, it's consistency. I think he's a player. Maybe I'm asking too much. He should be looking at double figures in both categories, 10 goals, 10 assists. He should be looking at that, I think, now. I think he's that good. I rate him that highly.
And what about the other two then? We've got the Reals, Sociedad and Betis. Now, Jack will be listening and he'll be hoping for some nice, kind words on his beloved Real Betis. And you talked about the fact that Benzema's the face of La Liga. Now, you're wrong. It's Joaquin. It was always Joaquin, David. Come on.
Well, you're close. I'd say Sergio Canales, but yeah, you know, he's one of my favorite players out of any league, out of any player. So I'll always be behind Canales. Betis, I think they had a loss in losing Emerson, who's been so, so good for them from fullback. And I thought Barcelona would come call. At first, I thought, oh, Barcelona are going to buy him back, and then they're going to sell him straight away to a Brighton or somewhere like that for 30 million. Alas, it looks like they're keeping him. I think they're very lucky to have him. I think he's such a good player. He's come on leaps and bounds at Betis. I think he became a better player in the end than Junior Firpo, who's just rocked up at Leeds, of course. He became a better fullback than him, I think, overall. So it's going to be interesting to see how Betis respond there. But again, I think they're a club that they're going to say, okay, maybe we can expect more from players that we already have. Linus, we still haven't seen the best of him. Still so much hype around him, especially if you speak to a Mexican football fan. They will tell you how great he is. But we still yet to see it really in La Liga.
Yeah, we just saw it at the Olympics because he was so much fun at the Olympics. It's when he pulls on that Mexico shirt, mate. Different player.
Yeah, that's where it is. Yeah, you'll just have to forget the white stripes, I think, and for Betis, and then it'll be okay. So we've got more from him. I think Borja Iglesias as well is just starting to look like somebody who can, you know, dominate again. And the player that we saw at Celta, there was a player that we saw at Espanyol and Zaragoza as well. So he'll be thinking, oh, next season, can I honestly get 20, 25 goals? I think he should be looking at that, especially when he's got somebody like Fekir behind him as well. So I think it's kind of relying on the players that you've already got to step up even further. And Real Sociedad, who we're going to talk about next, are another one. Lots of young players who they'll be saying, okay, you're ready to take the next step up. You know, who knows how many Isaac can get next season.
Yeah, precise. I mean, continuity is something to be spoken for in positive terms. This is great news for these guys. I mean, look, Sevilla may yet lose Koundé, but we'll have to see. The other guy is probably in good shape. I mean, the way this finished out last season, big gap between Sevilla and Villarreal, of course. And is there a team here other than Sevilla that you think can actually sort of crack into this top three? I know that they haven't added necessarily, but is the top three weak enough for any of these guys to break that hold?
I think it's definitely just a year where anyone can spring a surprise. I think what's happened at Real Madrid and Barcelona this summer, and also, you know, I think Atleti are just looking around right now and seeing all the insecurity with different teams, and they're probably just licking their lips at what's going on because they've just got on with business. They've landed a brilliant player in Rodrigo de Paul, who could add so much to them. I think they are probably out and away at the moment until we actually see what Barcelona and Real Madrid turn up, basically. And then I think the rest of the teams are definitely going to be chasing that. I think Sevilla are just, again, I keep saying this word, but it's about consistency. It's about continuity. Sevilla are a very stable team right now. Lopetegui, I think, he's done a fantastic job. I'm a big fan of him, though, and I really like the stability and the understanding that he's brought there. It's not spectacular at times, but it's just solid. It's very, very good defence they've got there. And like I say, they've added to it with Montiel as well. And they're going to be really dangerous again. And I think they might fancy themselves to have a go at Barcelona and Real Madrid and Atleti.
Yeah, very good. Right, let's go from the top or near the top of the table down to the bottom. What's in it number two, David?
Yeah, we're going to look at those teams very much down at the bottom, and we could see some surprise teams down there. Teams who have in previous years been at the top, and I'm talking about Valencia. I think, you know, it's good. You look at the way that they're operating in the market and how they are as a club. You just don't know what you're going to get from them. I think Getafe, who have, you know, been high flyers in recent years, they've lost Bordalas. I've looked at their buys as well, and it looks... there's a lot of panic, and I think, you know, when I see what they're doing, they're getting lots of players in. I'm not too sure whether it's quantity over quality right now with Getafe. And I'm sorry to say this, but your boy's Granada.
Oh, yeah, we do a therapy session on this one. Look, I'm deeply concerned about this one as well, my friends. I'll tell you where I am first, see if you agree with me. It's good to have someone to talk to us about. Losing Diego Martinez is obviously an absolutely massive problem. He is a fantastic manager. But the big problem, the bigger problem, is that it's a squad that is fully built in his image. Yeah. And he was the one that managed to produce something on a bit of a shoestring, pull in loanies that Granada probably shouldn't have, but they're there because of him. Absolutely. And when a squad is so clearly built in that man's image, I think the best thing you can do then is to try and find another figure that's similar. Okay, you're not going to find another Martinez, but same style of football. Look, you may correct me, but Robert Moreno is definitely not on that shortlist. He's not the man that you go to and go, oh, you can take this squad on a notch. This is you don't fit this squad at all. And now we have to start again.
I also think he's a punt. It's a very hopeful hire, I think, because we don't know too much about him as a coach, in all honesty, do you know? What the sample size that we've had of him is very, very small. We don't really know what his identity is. He's been a continuation man, and we don't really know whether, you know, if Granada's losing at half time, whether he's somebody who's willing to shake things up and change things around, and can he make the decisions to change games. We don't know that from him. So I think, and I don't think Granada do either. I think they've just said, you know, he's another young coach on the market. Is he somebody we can build with, and what we hope to do with Martinez?
Yeah, I mean, if there is one silver lining, and I will put this out there because I just need cheering up, I'm just going to cheer myself up, is we have finally seen the end of the Jesus Vallejo era at Granada, which went on 18 months too long, as far as I'm concerned. Couldn't get away from the man, but it's done. For some reason, and this is basically the only stick I've ever had to beat Diego Martinez with, you know, Martinez really likes Vallejo.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
I don't know why. And it's gone now. It's finished. Without Martinez, there's no Vallejo. It's good. We're done.
He's a player who's just always been rated in Spain. When he first came through, he was highly rated. Captained all the youth teams as well. And so he's always got a nice reputation around. And I think they've stuck with him through that because he's a very talented player. He's a lovely ball player and centre-back on his day. But yes, I completely agree. He's had those injuries, and I think his confidence and has completely gone with mistakes. And yeah, it was a horror show at times for you guys.
Is there an element there of, like, if you come through the academy at Real Madrid in Spain, you just get given more chances?
Yeah, I mean, he came through Zaragoza's academy and he was still very highly rated there, but he got that move so early to Real Madrid. And yes, the reputation sticks with him. If you've been in the books of Barcelona or Real Madrid, you automatically kind of just have that little bit of extra, you know, reputation, I think, when you're trying to sell yourself as a player. It's certainly what the agents rely upon. They'll say, oh, don't you know, he was once on the books as Real Madrid. He was going to be Sergio Ramos's successor at one point, you know. And people will go, oh, right, okay, he must be good. And then they'll take him in.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, so there's Valencia, there's Getafe, and there's Granada kind of on relegation watch of the established order of La Liga recently anyway. All three of these teams have been playing Europa League football in the last four or 5 years. So it'd be sorry to see. But again, let's go to something a bit more positive for our final storyline. Mm.
Yeah, that's Espanyol. They are back in the big time. They were promoted with flying colours. I think they were head and shoulders above any team in La Liga 1-2-3 last year. They've got a very good young squad, I think. There's a lot of talented young players. Still got a little bit of experience in there, but I think it could be exciting. And they also arrived back with a man they know can get them 20, 25 goals in RDT. The notorious RDT is back.
We like Raúl de Tomás here. Well, Jack especially likes Raúl de Tomás, but he's there. And you're right, this squad, you look through it quickly, and actually a couple of names that you pick out immediately, like Oscar Gil and Javi Puado, who have been involved for Spain's youth teams in various competitions over the course of the summer, mixed in with a bit of experience here and there. Actually quite a nice build. What do you think this team can actually achieve as newly promoted contenders?
Yeah, I think looking at the level of unknown and what we've had in, and nobody's really, you look at that whole table, who has honestly improved a lot? I don't really know if anyone has, the teams that they will be battling. Who else has a striker that they know can get them 20 goals a season? And there's a lot of excitement about young Nico Melamed as well. I want to talk about him because Espanyol feel like they have their own kind of little mini Messi there in Nico Melamed. Somebody who's just a bit exciting, a little bit different. He can change a game. He's got skills. He's got flair. Very much gets the fans, you know, off the seats. He's just, and I think they really, really value him as well. And the other younger players that have got that have, they're already now used to winning. They've already got a winner mentality and they feel that they can go up. No fear, really. And I think they've got a great manager as well, who's very much the Spanish Diego Simeone, I always call him. He had a few years ago, he was brilliant at Nastic, the Tarragona, who were very much tipped for relegation. And they almost got promoted. Unfortunately, that side ended up getting broken up a little bit. And I think they've just got so many little parts about them, Espanyol, that makes them exciting. And I honestly think, to answer your question, they can easily be looking, you know, a top half finish between 10 and 6, easy.
That would be amazing to come into the league and do that. I mean, I know that feels devalued a little bit. Leeds have just done the same thing in the Premier League, stepped up, finished in the top half.
Yeah.
But it's not easily done. Leeds needed Marcelo Bielsa to do it. So if Espanyol can pull anything out of the bag like that, then fair play. David, thanks so much for your insight. Really appreciate you coming on and sharing those tidbits. Where can the Rank Squad find you on socials and anywhere else?
Yeah, of course. You can just grab me on Twitter, David Jacka. That's J-A-C-A. And still talk about Spanish football on there. So, of course, get there.
Spanish football is still happening, guys. It's not been cancelled. We are all good. We're ready to go. All right. Thanks, David.
Thanks, mate.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Well, thank you so much to David for joining us and talking. Oh, I love that Espanyol point. I've got to say, I'm really, really in on Espanyol dialing into that top 10. But I want to expand a little bit more about the chasing pack, obviously, that he spoke about there. And I suppose the obvious place to start is with Villarreal, who played in the Super Cup midweek and gave a very, very good account of themselves against Chelsea in a game that we were a little bit worried about with them because they had such a, well, an injury crisis going on.
Yes, it's going to sound a bit weird for the listeners because I actually spoke to David on the Wednesday and the Super Cup hadn't quite happened yet. And then I joined you guys again afterwards and we know what happened and talked about Villarreal and it's about depth. It's about being able to fight on all fronts. And it's about being able to send out a team that can genuinely compete in midweek and in La Liga at the weekend. And they came into the Super Cup with a real test on their hands because they had like no players, like just none of them. Little side note before we begin, Jack, Juan Foyt taking the 8 shirt.
He wore it last year as well.
It's just, but it's done now. He's actually physically just gone again with that one. He wasn't just packed in at the end on loan. He's signed and he's taken the 8 and it's gross.
It's then horrible when he's playing at right back. It's a little bit more acceptable when he moves into centre midfield.
He's actually quite good in midfield. Isn't he? Yeah. I'm starting to think Juan Foyt might be a really
good player. I actually always liked him, to be honest.
Might be a really good player, but he's really good at right back.
Named as a centre back, I'm pretty sure, on most football websites. No one's sure where that man plays.
He doesn't know either. But yeah, a lot of injuries. I mean, you're missing Dani Parejo and about 6 others yesterday. And yeah, a lot of players have got to step up. Players that are on the fringes of the squad, stepping in. Like Jeremy Pino is still not necessarily a first-team player for Villarreal when Chukwueze is fit and you've got a makeshift centre-mid pairing. They actually had to play their best goalkeeper by default because usually they would play Rui in the cups, but Rui was injured. Asenjo wasn't great on the penalties, was he?
No, but again, he is not the penalty expert, as we know.
No. But it was a good performance for Villarreal. I know that Dean, it went on too long for Dean. I think he went to bed.
Oh, I was bored after 5 minutes.
Mate, it was a good game.
It was a good game.
It was a good game.
It's just a match I've never, ever taken seriously or got into. It's every year it becomes more hyped and people try to make it more part of the calendar. And for me, it's just not important.
It's a Johan Gamper trophy.
Yeah, this is a proper glorified game.
This is an official.
The problem I have is, like, I look at the lineup and I'm like, well, this isn't Chelsea's proper team, so it doesn't really matter. That's how I look at it. Like, Chalobah's playing, like, full game. Like, no, I'm not interested. He's not going to play a single minute next season.
I hope he plays a bit more.
I think he might. He was excellent.
He played himself into contention yesterday.
He'll probably be
on
loan at, like, MK Dons next week.
But back to Villarreal, and the point from David on continuity being the key factor for the four teams there that finished between fourth and seventh last season. And yeah, as we speak, Koundé hasn't left Sevilla. Isak signed a new deal with Real Sociedad. Gerard Moreno signed a new deal with Villarreal. He's going to be there till he's 78 now. Like, it's continuity, and it's the first time in ages these teams have been able to do that. And for Villarreal, that's super important, balancing a Champions League campaign now, because they've got to field their best 11 quite a lot, and then they're going to have some serious reserves to call upon. Those midweek games just got super hard.
We do need to talk about the fact that Bouly Dia was excellent. Yeah. And what a nice little partnership that could be between him and Gerard Moreno. And
he was good.
It gives them something else in that attacking rotation, right? Because we saw towards the end of the season, it started to get a wee bit thin on the ground there for Villarreal. Brought in someone who not only has been excellent in France, and who was on the hit list, Dean, you know more than us, but of West Ham, of loads of other Premier League clubs in last January, and wanted to, a lot of people tried to make a move for Bouly Dia, but it didn't work out. This feels like a really nice place for him to have ended up, and I'm really excited to watch that partnership of him and Moreno as it goes from strength to strength.
Well, the goal already, they're showing their little synergy there with the back heel, and actually Dia managed to break into some space a couple of times, didn't he? Missed a one-on-one that was very well saved by Edouard Mendy. And I think the movement he showed, the strength he showed in holding the ball up, and the awareness for some of the passes as well. Look, I haven't seen much of Bouly Dia, but I was very impressed with his initial outing, and the chemistry with Gerard Moreno is there. So that's great for Villarreal's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, look, Villarreal should now come into the top four conversation this season. Like, on the back of what they did last season, they've got a lot of momentum, I guess, in that sense, that they've shown that they can compete at that level of going on to win the Europa League. Really, they should see this as an opportunity to get into that top four conversation. But Sevilla should prove too much to, one, make sure they can't do that. But actually, Sevilla should look at next season as an opportunity for them to have an even stronger chance of actually winning this league, because
they weren't even far off last year.
They weren't far off last year, and they have to see this year as like, okay, it's another chance. This might not ever happen again, right? Barca losing Messi in a bit of a mess. Real Madrid not strengthening like they usually do. Don't know what we're getting. The champions are Atletico Madrid. Okay, they're very good, but we weren't far off them as it was. We finished fourth 2 years in a row, and that's great. We've got that consistency of being that side. Mm. But can we now go one further? Because it only fell away right at the end. And to be honest, why did they fall away? Was it a lack of experience? Were they completely shattered? Probably a bit of both. But they would have learned from that, and hopefully they've come through it. I mean, I find it a bit strange, like, one of their main signings of the summer is a new goalkeeper. And I thought their goalkeeper was one of their best players.
Another goalkeeper who scores as well.
Yeah,
They've got two goal-scoring goalkeepers.
Lopetegui was a goalkeeper,
wasn't it?
Neither
of them that great in goal.
This is Dimitrovic.
Yeah, Dimitrovic has signed. And
they signed him on a free contract, they didn't they? I think they had this done in March or something like that. Yeah.
It was one of those. You assume that he's probably going to be a backup. But Sevilla rotate their goalkeepers then. They have done for years.
Well, this is the point that I was going to make. I spoke to someone who covers Sevilla and knows far more about than I do, and they said there's actually a possibility here that they rotate goalkeepers, which in England we just
it's a bit of a there's a bit more of a feel that you can do a cup, and
that's like, it.
Like, Geronimo Rulli for Villarreal last season, for example, played pretty much all of Europe and every cup, and Sergio Asenjo was the league goalkeeper.
Did they stick with it for the final?
Yeah, and they stuck with it for the final.
But this is going a bit further. Rather than having a League Cup divide, which obviously Barcelona did with Claudio Bravo and Marc-André Ter Stegen, that sort of stuff. Like, this is actually like league rotation of goalkeepers. And Ralf Hasenhüttl did it last year. He gave Alex McCarthy a couple games. Then he said, right, Forster's in for the next three. Then we'll bring McCarthy back in. And everyone's going, what? Like, this is not what you do.
Yeah.
League rotation of goalkeepers is very, very weird, but we might be about to see it.
Lopetegui was a goalkeeper, right?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken.
So maybe he thinks, what would have really benefited me in my career? I know, having someone to rotate with, so I got a bit of a rest every now and then. I don't know what it is, but if he was a goalkeeper himself, there's not many managers who actually understand that position.
No.
So to bring in some strong competition for a great goalkeeper that they've already got is really interesting. Addition, really.
I think the only two goalkeeper managers I can name are Nuno and Lopetegui.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
They're so rare.
They are very rare, yeah.
It's a funny one, isn't it? I mean, I guess we can't talk about Sevilla and not address the fact that there have been constant rumours that Jules Koundé is on the way out of the club. Do you know any more, Dean, and you know, at the time of writing? Obviously, things change so quickly with transfers, and this could be completely out of date by the time we have it tomorrow. But obviously, Chelsea,
yeah, I mean, the update from yesterday was just that Sevilla aren't budging over this valuation, and that's, you know, you either pay the money or you don't.
Is it release clause?
Yeah, and it's like, this is the valuation. I don't know what you want us to say. Like, we don't want any of your players. We don't want any offers.
Stop trying to give us Kurt
we don't
Zuma.
Want Kurt, yeah, we
Kurt Zuma has to stay at Chelsea from around.
Trying to push us, Kurt
That's
Zuma.
All my Chelsea friends tell me.
So if they meet the valuation, then yeah, it'll be a Chelsea player. But until then, he's going to be at Sevilla. And I'd imagine Chelsea will do it because they need it. And they've got this far. It's not like Chelsea to not go through with something at this point. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, we haven't spoken about Lamella either, by the way, which... It's actually quite a good addition, I think.
I quite like it. I mean, look, there's obviously this element that Brian Hill didn't play for Sevilla last season, and they were excited about bringing him in and seeing where he got to. But it's also not like you've lost a first-teamer and replaced him. Yeah. You've lost someone who was out on loan. To bring in Lamella, who strikes me as the kind of person that, if he could get a few games under his belt and stay injury-free, which I know is a big ask for Eric Lamella, is someone who could definitely have a say for Sevilla this season. He strikes me as someone who might succeed here.
It's like David said, it's like Sevilla is just Argentine Central. There's four, five, six of them in it. I don't know what it's like.
Montiel is now signed, done, finished,
and
over.
And Lamella just feels right at Sevilla. I don't know. And maybe the style of the league will suit him a little bit better. It is a big if to say that Lamella can do anything because we just haven't seen him do much. I haven't seen him string games together or anything like that for a long, long time. But again, you're right. It's not like you're losing a key piece of your attack and you're replacing it with Lamella. You're adding Lamella to what you have, which is already pretty good. It's Lucas Ocampos. He's brilliant. Brian Hill was never a feature for Sevilla. I would understand fans that were a bit upset about never really getting to see him play, but they haven't got weaker. And that's the key point. As they out of this cluster of clubs, Sevilla have the best opportunity here to push in and actually mount something and really stress Barca and Real Madrid out and maybe even push for the title. And if Koundé stays, you just can't really rule it out.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough. I'm going to obviously cross Seville now.
Fine.
It feels like the right time to talk about Betis, who also feel like they could have been picked apart this summer and just haven't been, really. I mean, Emerson going to Barcelona is the one big loss, you'd imagine. Issa Mandy left on a free contract. He signed for Villarreal, but... You know, the rotation within Betis' centre-halves anyway meant that doesn't feel like a huge deal, if I'm being honest. They've brought in Juan Miranda again, but on a permanent deal this time, and Yusuf Sabali to play right back, to fill in that Emerson role.
This made me laugh. This is like Jack Collins' Venn diagram.
It really is, isn't it? And of course, you then put into the fact that the Betis probably have the best goalkeeper now outside of the top four. Now, Sam, I know you're rolling your eyes at me, but it's true, isn't it?
We're not talking about this.
We are talking about it because we're talking about where Betis have got to. And the fact that they've brought in Rui Silva is a huge, huge deal for them. You know, Claudio Bravo has been good, but he's not getting any younger. This gives them a solid base from which to work from. And it does feel that if Betis can hold on to all of these players in terms of, you know, the attacking quartet, and get them to tick a little bit more. And we're still seeing Diego Lainez, for example, working his way into this side and getting himself into a place where he really feels like he can challenge for a first-team starting spot. If that can all start to tick along now, Betis feel like their squad is strong enough to challenge top four.
I mean, yeah, you talk about keeping that attacking quartet. There just hasn't been really any murmurs of Nabil Fekir leaving, right? And he's the man that if you keep around and you continue to add to the squad, like with players sadly like Silva, then Betis can start looking up the table. They're not yo-yoing up and down as they have done for the last 3 or 4 years. And they finished sixth last season. Again, quite far off Sevilla. There's a big jump to fourth place there. But Real Betis and Real Sociedad have kept their stars. They haven't been weakened. It's weird. It's really weird. And I'm sure you'll enjoy the season, mate. I'm sure you'll enjoy Rui.
I think it's going to be great, mate. I really am. I know you're sad.
He's my favourite.
I know.
Him and Yangel Herrera were my favourites, and they're gone.
They've all gone. Let's talk lastly about Real Sociedad, because they'll also be looking at kicking on. And you mentioned at the top there that Alex Isak pretty much locked down. And it feels like Real Sociedad also want to push on this season. This is what makes this exciting. Not only have we talked about the fact that the top three have maybe levelled out in terms of where they're at, but it also feels like the chasing pack has caught up. And that in itself makes for this as to be a very interesting. You wouldn't be surprised this year to see fourth to seventh beating any of the top three. It wouldn't shock you. That's where we're at now with La Liga.
It might happen on Saturday.
Well, it might well happen on Saturday.
It could well happen. I mean, you're right. It's ironing things out a little bit, and place number one in the table all the way down to seven, maybe even down to sort of eight with Athletic Club Bilbao. Open. Could be relatively open. The points gap between them may be quite well staggered. And it's, man, I'm sure that lots of people are looking at La Liga this season and going, well, no Messi, no Ramos, Ronaldo left a while ago. They're looking at it and seeing a lack of star power. They're seeing a fading force in Barcelona and Real Madrid. All it does is make it more competitive. Isn't that what we've been asking for the last five, 10 years in La Liga? Just a bit more competitive, maybe less polarized. That's exactly what we've got.
I think you see a lot of people shouting La Liga in the mud, and I think it's ridiculous. I think La Liga is taking an absolute battering, and we're seeing a whole load of exceptional narratives start to come to the fore. And look, that doesn't always mean it's the world's best players, but you might be seeing the next generation of the world's best players coming through.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's always something to keep an eye on. And look, it goes back to all the things we were saying right at the top about Barcelona, right? That yes, they no longer have Lionel Messi. Yes, that makes them a worse side. But does it free the door for a couple more La Masia graduates to come through? Does it free Pedri to become the creative spark in the middle of this side? Does it free Alex Callado, who was going out on loan to Belgium and in crisis talks with the club, to suddenly have a spot in this starting 11 to make his mark after so many years of promise? And with all of that kind of ticking along, that's just Barcelona. And you come out of it and you think, you look at the rest of this league and you think, this is really competitive. It's going to be really tight. There's no obvious favourite for the title. You know, we said that Atleti probably favourites in our eyes. The bookies have Real Madrid. Like, there isn't anyone jumping out at you and going, oh, that's a done deal. Mm. And we're talking about the fact that the chasing pack is closer than ever before to that top tier. Suddenly, you're looking at a league which could go absolutely anywhere. And that is exciting.
There's a good saying. It's not football, it's La Liga.
No!
It's back. La Liga TV is back.
La Liga TV is back. The best adverts on earth are back in the building.
If you haven't got La Liga TV, go and buy it. No, this is not an advert.
It's really not.
Go and watch all the adverts.
It's just the adverts. Just do it for the adverts.
It's not an advert, but go and watch the adverts because it's great. This is not football.
Worth a sign-up price for the adverts alone.
No, but yeah, you're right. You are right.
Right. And on that note, I think it might be time that we call this a day. All that's left for me to do really is to say thank you so much to David Carlidge for joining us earlier and discussing a few more narratives in a bit more depth. Thank you very much to Sam Tai.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you very much to Dean Jones.
I'm going
to
go and buy the new Real Madrid kits, I think. Get Dylan a couple of those. Yeah. How nice are they, by the way?
They are nice.
Real Madrid have got two very nice kits this season.
The lilac Barcelona is lovely.
That is nice.
The purple Betis is really nice.
Is it?
There's some really nice kits this year. Nice kits in
is the league. Is he only had Barcelona Messi shirts before? Is he allowed to have a Real Madrid kit for next season?
No, I think you might have to get him a Pedri shirt. The lilac Pedri shirt.
Okay, so what about this? How do we feel about Dylan is a Barcelona fan now and Reece becomes a Real Madrid fan?
Yeah.
Is this a good rivalry?
Set up family classic.
I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, should I set up some rivalries? Like one's Milan, one's Juve, one's Real, one's Barca.
Imagine
one's Fulham, one's Chelsea.
No, too far. You've gone too far. You will not be doing it.
Imagine the YouTube content in 10 years.
It's good, isn't it?
You're going to set them up as stars. Fantastic. Set Reece up
as
a Real Madrid fan.
We're brothers from London. But
I'll get some pictures in as soon as those kits are off.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC, our La Liga preview for the season. Thank you for listening. This is the end of our free week on the main feed where we've hopefully showed you what a great time we have over on our Patreon, over in our Ultras community. As an extra incentive, if you fancy joining up, anyone who's joined this week or in the next week, off the back of this free week, we're going to be putting in a prize draw to win a football shirt of your choice. And so if there wasn't an incentive enough before to come and join and get involved with the Ultras community, there's an extra one. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back on Wednesday next week here to do a Serie A preview. But, of course, you can see us on Monday for the postbox. Take it easy. Peace.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online
so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.